similar to Andrew, I'm probably talking to an audience I'm about to say. But just to set out then that in England and Wales currently, if an individual is arrested in connection with a recordable offence, then the police have the power in this country to take the fingerprints and biological samples of that individual without their consent. Obviously, many of the people who are arrested by the police, even if they haven't committed that offence, may well have committed other offences. So taking samples from these individuals raises the possibility then that we might be able to solve other previously unsolved offences. So in our view, the authority the police have to actually take these fingerprints and samples without consent from those who have been arrested on suspicion of involvement with a recordable offence is a proportionate power to the aim of detecting and prosecuting crime. At the same time, however, we do note that very often this distinction between recordable and non-recordable offences can be fairly arbitrary. Just for one example, failing to give advance notice of a procession is a recordable offence, but obstruction of the highway is not a recordable offence. So these lines between recordable and recordable can be very blurred, and we actually recommend that the list of recordable offences be rationalised so that the powers to take DNA and fingerprints will simply be retained for the more serious offences and will exclude all minor and non-imprisonable offences. You may have heard that the Home Office are looking into these police powers under the Police and Criminal Evidence Act of 1984, and there was a document released in March of this year which was aiming to consult the public on changes to police powers. And in this document there was a suggestion that the police actually may have a further extension of their powers to take DNA samples and fingerprints from all individuals arrested, regardless of the severity of the offence. So the police could then take DNA and fingerprints from anybody under arrest. And in our view, this has now become a disproportionate response to the aims of identifying an individual and confirming whether or not they were present at a crime scene. So suspicion of involvement in a minor offence, such as littering, traffic offences and so forth, does not justify the taking of bioinformation without consent. We also add that some of you may know that, of course, we have the technology now to take fingerprints electronically on handheld devices. And, of course, at the moment, those fingerprints aren't then stored on a database, and we would like to see that that provision retained. So fingerprints aren't automatically stored on a database if they are taken, say, at a roadside by the police. Now, so that's the taking of DNA. So we fully support the taking of DNA from the police. However, things get a little more difficult when we start looking at the retention then of this information. And this can be more controversial than the taking of the bioinformation. And of course, in particular, the retention of the biological samples themselves, the cheek scrapers they've been called, is more controversial still and can raise a great deal of ethical concerns. As you will know, the Criminal Justice Act 2003 extended the retention of fingerprints and biological samples so that all individuals who have their bioinformation taken under arrest have this information then indefinitely retained by the police, regardless of whatever then happens with that case for which they were arrested for. So if they're not subsequently charged or if they are acquitted of any of charges, then the police can still retain that information. And of course, were the Home Office to support the extension of police powers, this would mean that anybody arrested for anything in the country would have their bioinformation retained permanently. It's our view then that at present there's actually a lack of convincing evidence that retaining the profiles of those individuals who weren't actually charged with any offence or not later convicted of an offence has had a significant impact on the detection rates. And hence it's actually very difficult to argue that such retention can be justified. Of course, independent research on this and further statistics could be commissioned by the Home Office. So in view of this lack of present evidence and the implications for individuals being on the database, we recommend that all bioinformation and, of course, the subject biological samples should be retained indefinitely only for those individuals who are convicted of a recordable offence. This would then bring the law in England and Wales and Northern Ireland into line with that in Scotland. The retention of profiles and samples is only proportionate, in our view, for those who've been convicted of offences. In all other cases, once the bioinformation has been taken and been searched against the database, then they can be then deleted from the database. Obviously, if further research were to demonstrate the huge benefit from retention of innocent samples, then we could revisit this recommendation. However, the Scottish practice of allowing the retention of samples and profiles for 3 years for those charged for serious or violent sexual offences, even if there is no conviction, could also be followed in this country. So we would simply shift the burden, perhaps, of proof onto the police that if they wish to retain the DNA of an individual who hasn't been convicted, then they would have to request that rather than it be retained permanently and then individuals have to try and get their information off the database. So the costs of sampling and maintaining the database and storing these millions of samples will continue to escalate. Yet, as we say, there's very little supportive evidence at the moment in terms of significant benefits of crime detection of keeping all these innocent samples. An alternative focus perhaps could be to ensure that the bioinformation that's already available to the police is fully exploited. So we talk in our report about prioritising the collection of bioinformation from crime scenes rather than from increasing amounts of individuals. The government has already claimed that the database contains the whole of the active suspect criminal population, which was their initial aim when they started setting up the database. Yet at present we have a situation where fewer than 20% of crime scenes are forensically examined and a very small proportion of these actually yield any biological information whatsoever. So we do recommend that expenditure for expert crime scene analysis should be given a higher priority rather than the increased collection of samples from individuals. If the government is right to assert that the criminal population is already on the National DNA Database, then the improvements in criminal detection rest heavily on expanding crime scene collection and making sure we're making full use of the DNA information we already have on the database. Alternatively as well, crime scene samples are not retained permanently, so they're destroyed once the police have decided that no further action will be taken in a case. We're actually recommending that that be reversed and that there be permanent retention of crime scene samples so that the police could possibly identify, say, multiple suspects who may be involved in a case, and also perhaps leaves open the possibility of rectifying any miscarriages of justice that might come to light in the future. So because crime scene samples there are unique, then these should be retained permanently. Statistics that have emerged from the Home Office about the DNA database very often have been inconsistent, incomplete, and most often just simply confusing. So we do recommend there should be improved recording of police data on DNA matches and better statistics to inform key stakeholders and the wider public about the uses of the database and the benefits of the database. This would also help us explore the cost effectiveness of this DNA database and whether there should be any further extension of the database, and provide evidence as to whether the infringements on liberty, privacy and autonomy of individuals is actually justified. So we're asking for policy decisions really to be based upon more transparent debate around these issues, with more detailed independent research having been undertaken on the DNA database and fingerprints and their effectiveness. We do make some further recommendations about the DNA database concerning some particular issues. Victims and witnesses obviously now have their DNA taken, their bioinformation taken for elimination purposes, and at that time they can consent to having this permanently loaded onto the database. Of course, there are issues around whether this consent is truly informed, whether they truly understand what it is they're consenting to, and we would actually recommend that they not be asked whether they can have their DNA permanently loaded. And if they do consent, then this consent could be revoked. So they should be able to ask at any point without any reason to have their DNA removed, which currently is not the situation. It's permanently loaded and cannot be removed. In our view, the disproportionate overrepresentation, perhaps, of black ethnic minorities is a matter of considerable concern, as Professor Heppel has already pointed out. Although, of course, this does arise from policing practices rather than the actual database itself. Nevertheless, such disparities do increase the risk of stigmatisation and can lead to further alienation of ethnic minority communities from the police and the criminal justice system. So we welcome any equality impact assessment that's being undertaken, and it should reveal the extent to which this discretionary use of powers of arrest or policing practices is contributing to this overrepresentation on the database. And then police forces may then be put under a positive obligation to take steps to address this overrepresentation. With regard to minors, children are currently treated in the same way as adults when it comes to the database. There are currently around 750,000 under 18s on the National DNA database. However, the United Nations does actually require that special attention be paid to minors in the legal system, and that if they have offended, they should be given opportunities for rehabilitation. The Nuffield Council is therefore recommending that there should be a presumption in favour of removal of children's DNA from the database, unless the police again can provide a good reason why they think the DNA of that particular individual should be retained. So if they were involved with a very serious offence or there's a very high risk of reoffending, then the police could justify keeping it. And Graham Laurie will talk later about the requirements for removal of adults from the database. Something that's been talked about at the moment recently and is an issue that arises now and again is this idea of perhaps addressing these disparities with ethnic minorities by having a universal-wide database. So taking everybody's DNA at birth to provide a population-wide forensic database. So obviously then the attraction being that the police could then easily solve any crime that's committed and we wouldn't have problems of discrimination. However, we do decide that this kind of database, apart from being hugely expensive, would be difficult to maintain. It would be impractical for the collection of samples from different categories, particularly visitors and tourists to the UK. I remember speaking to one police officer and he said he would resign the day that he has to take his grandma to the local police station and take her DNA because he didn't think his granny really should be giving up her DNA to the police. There'd also be increased worries, of course, about function creep, given that a population-wide database, of course, would then become far more attractive to a wide variety of organisations and corporations. So then we would have to insist upon far more stringent regulation of controls. Of course, this might shift as well the relationship between the individual and the state, insofar as it's then treating all individuals as potential suspects in criminal investigations, rather than the ordinary citizens of goodwill and intent. It would also be unlikely to have a great impact on public safety, because of course most crime detection does not involve DNA. Therefore, it does seem that the intrusion of privacy incurred would not then be subsequently outweighed by the benefits to society. And it's for these reasons that the Nuffield Council is against the establishment at this time of a population-wide forensic database. However, this, of course, could be subject to review as the technology perhaps develops in the future. So just to finish at trial stage, We do recommend further the timely disclosure of all bioinformation evidence to all parties. We do know from previous miscarriages of justice that the non-disclosure of evidence is highly significant in wrongful convictions. And of course, all fingerprint and DNA evidence can be hugely persuasive at court, and so all parties need time to have a look at this evidence. We also recommend that fingerprint evidence should be a little more circumspect than it is presently at court, that it should be clear that fingerprint matching is a matter of expert judgment and not scientific certainty. And of course, while there are risks, we do have a situation at the moment where DNA cannot be the sole prosecution evidence, so you cannot be convicted without any other evidence. But we do have concerns about confusion among legal professionals, the accurate presentation of DNA evidence at court, and we would call for legal professionals to have a minimum understanding of statistics and DNA evidence before they give this evidence. And of course, juries need to be fully informed about the limitations and the capabilities of DNA evidence when they're sitting in judgment of an offender using this evidence. Thank you. And Bronwyn Parry now is going to discuss other